Root Insurance puts you in control. Root is a new type of car insurance that uses the sensors in your smartphone to look deeper than other insurers. Here's how it works. Download the Root app, hit the road, and we'll take care of the rest. The app measures your driving behavior, like turning and braking, and gives you a custom rate based primarily on your driving. The better you drive, the better your rate, meaning good drivers could save hundreds. Visit joinroot.com today to get started. Disclaimers may apply. See joinroot.com for details.
Curious fuckers, we have some exciting updates and news. That's the
BBC, like, going in. So we actually have our launch date for our Patreon. It is the 9th of... What month?
October.
I knew that. 9th of October, guys. So make sure on the 9th you go and check it out for that extra deliciously interesting, juicy. I don't want to say juicy because you always say juicy.
Content. But it is juicy. It's fucking juicy.
It is fucking juicy. It's so juicy. It's like a watermelon.
we spill all the teas. All the teas. All the British teas.
Yeah. Sticky, sweet tea.
You're listening to Fucks Given, the one with Megara Fury.
Hello, curious fuckers. I'm Reed.
And I'm Florence, and together we're Come Curious.
When we're not just fucking around on YouTube and Instagram,
every Thursday we invite a new guest onto Fucks Given to talk about their best fucks, worst fucks,
and the fucks that made them.
We also answer your sex questions and read out your sex stories.
So stay tuned as we divulge all the delicious details.
Hey, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm really good actually. Things have been going very well when it comes to the whole hypno thing, so I'm like tinkering with the other business end of people for a change.
Oh, hypno?
So good. Yeah, I've been doing hypnosis and NLP and life coaching and all these kind of things.
Wow. So just using...
Yeah, it's so much fun. So I'm just using all my experience as like a dominatrix who's used to dealing with people like all that kind of shame and stuff around their kinks and things, and just helping people that are, you know, maybe struggling a little bit or if there's any addiction stuff going on, because I've got experience of that as well. So yeah, it's been good.
That is so interesting. Like straight off the bat, being a dominatrix and a sex worker links so well with different types of therapies.
Yeah, absolutely. Even since I was a dancer, most people think that as a dancer you're going to go in there and it's going to be like hyper sleazy, guys trying to touch you and all that. It's really not. It's guys want to tell you that they want you to tell them that they work too hard and they should take a day off and, you know, they're enough.
I think everyone likes to be told that, especially by a sexy lady.
Yeah, you work so hard. We should just go on holiday together. That's what guys want to hear. They don't care about anything else. It's just, as a sex worker, you always end up a therapist for people. You know, I get told things that I'm pretty sure people haven't told another soul in their life and never will. I'll take that to my grave, but it's nice. It's nice being trusted in that way.
Yeah, blimey. I mean, so is that how you would introduce yourself? Like if we were to say, tell our listeners who you are, would you follow that path?
So I would say, like, first and foremost, I'm a dominatrix and I'm a secretary for a trade union branch for sex workers in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
That's my two big things. And then thirdly, I'm a hypnotherapist, an NLP practitioner and a life coach. And I've actually come up with a whole like way of working, like a whole methodology, which has been so successful since I started it, called the Dominant Mindset Method. So
Ooh.
It's taking things that I've learned and integrating them and creating like a bespoke plan for people to be able to sort out whatever problems are coming up for them. So,
oh, that sounds so interesting. So how, tell us a little bit more as well about the union that you're a part of in Scotland.
So that came about when there was an MP down in London who decided that she wanted to try and bring in the Nordic model in Scotland or in the whole UK. And
remember that.
Yeah. So at that point, I thought my job's in danger. Even though I don't sell sex, it's still in danger because, you know, you open that floodgate and then everybody else topples, you know, it's like a domino effect that could happen. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, well, I'm already out there. People already very much know what I do. I've got nothing to hide, nothing to lose. So where would I go if I needed to protect a regular job? I would go and join a trade union to try and prevent redundancies and things. That's when I approached GMB because I wanted a big name, like a big trusted name in the trade union scene. Someone that's part of the TUC and the STUC.
What do those things stand for, by the way, for people that don't know?
TUC is basically the governing bodies for all trade unions. So the STUC and then the Scottish TUC, which is just basically just a big governing body. GMB are the only one who's gone against the grain because as a whole, the TUC they've adopted the thing that all sex work is exploitative and it's violence against women. GMB are the only trade union, apart from the kind of smaller fringe trade unions that are popping up just now, they're the only like mainstream one that have said no, sex workers are workers and they deserve the same protection as any other worker, which I thought was incredible. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, GMB loyal, but
I'm actually fully surprised that there are like just a general government trade union that is pro sex worker. That's actually that's such a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean they're just pro worker, full stop. You know, and they've got all the tools and everything that we need. We've got a full media team. We have like a social media team as well, someone that organises and vets all journalists that come in so that we make sure that we're not walking into traps and they will coach everybody. And the support we've had has been incredible. It's been really, really good.
Awesome.
Fuck number one, the last fuck.
My last fuck was quite a while ago. Lockdown has hit. it's really like uneventful. My last fuck was just literally 2 minutes. It lasted off the end of my bed.
Oh no!
I'm on point everyone, but yeah, that basically was it, and it was extremely disappointing.
Oh no!
I hate that. That's not one to go out on.
No, because the thing is, you can have a really great 2 minute fuck when you both come really quick and you're like, whoa. But yeah, if you're dissatisfied, then yeah, that's quite disappointing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't think either of us were that satisfied with it.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Like,
how has it been through lockdown as well and not having any sexual activity whilst I guess still having a job that is sex related but without, you know?
For me, like, sex is a very psychological thing. Like, you know, the physical part of it is obviously important and stuff, but for me, like, the psychological thing has to be there or I don't enjoy the physical side. So getting to do a lot of the stuff that I do at work, and especially, like, you know, still chatting to people online and doing bits there, it still kind of tickles that little psychological side of it. So I still feel like I'm involved and I have, like, I suppose a kind of warped version of a sex life.
A virtual sex life. Maybe that's your last fuck, though. Maybe that is your last fuck, like a virtual video fuck.
Yeah. You know, the clients that I get coming in, there's obviously a very strong boundary there. And the minute any sort of money changes hands, that changes things for me. But
yeah.
But I like that kind of that the creativity of what I do, and that's like a big, big thing. And I like to have that in my own sex life as well, as just having that creative part and having that kind of living out some things that I've got maybe stored up in my own mind that I want to do. So it's cool.
How has it been like during lockdown being a dominatrix? Have you been like working around that virtually?
So yeah, my dungeon closed.
Yeah,
so lockdown hit, and I went into panic mode because I'm not really an online person. I do my social media and things, but you know, cam work and stuff is something I've always just been like, I'd rather just not have money. I was kind of forced to look at that and to widen my perspective a little bit and go, okay, why are you uncomfortable with this? What is it about this? And I think it was, part of it was the money. It was like, £2 a minute doesn't sound that much, you know, but when you take off all of the different costs and stuff, like the commission for the company and everything else. And then I thought, well, you know, you're going to need, it's either £2 a minute or it's nothing, lady. So I started doing OnlyFans and really ramped that up. Admire Me as well. And then the thing that I've found with doing cam work, I've been doing it on adult work, is I was really surprised that I can't see the person that I'm talking to, and I'm such a visual person. See, if I can't see you and I can't see your expressions, if there's like silence, I'll fill that silence with my own thoughts and go, maybe they actually hate me, maybe I should have worn something else. Like sometimes those kind of insecurities were coming in when I was, because I was really rude to it.
You do go through it on webcam, because if somebody logs off or they don't want to speak to you anymore, you instantly relay that back onto yourself on what you've done, and you think it's your fault, rather than just thinking like, oh, maybe the postman just arrived, or his kid just came into the room, or like he lost internet connection. You have to really get yourself out of that mindset when you are doing webcam work, and truly not believe that it's you that's making them log off, or they just came quick, you know, and they're like, oh, done, I'm good, like, oh. See ya. Yeah.
So if, like, I think that was kind of a bit odd for me, especially when on adult work there's a 20 second delay and you've got like old man Bob one finger typing back to you, and I'm like, are they gone, or are they still always waiting for the kitchen and they're gone, kind of thing.
Fuck number two.
The best fuck.
My best fuck. Okay, so I like spontaneity. I like new things happening and stuff, things that I don't expect. And I was on holiday with a friend, and we ended up meeting this like Italian guy, just random Italian guy. She quite fancied him, I quite fancied him, and we were very, very drunk. And then we decided, and I was like, okay, well, we'll share then. This guy's got no idea that any of this conversation's going on. He's just standing, just being, just existing, and we're making all these like wild plans for him. But anyway, so we ended up talking to him, and I mean, she was really beautiful, and you know, I was no bad looking myself, so we were young in our 20s, and the thought never really crossed our mind that there would be any form of rejection. So you know, when you're young and you're just like, I'll have him, like,
I love that. It's like that confidence.
So yeah, so we ended up approaching him, and it just ended up this kind of like wild night, and we made this pact that we would keep our red high heels on the whole time, no matter what.
God, that's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
We also had a couple of other rules for ourselves. So one of the rules, he couldn't really speak much English, so we were discussing all this and he's just like smiling and nodding along like a real good himbo. And her and I are just like, right, so what do we do when one of us is bored? And I was like, I don't know. Well, what we could do is we could shout bail, bail. And then just...
it's like in the plane, when it's like, if you hear brace, brace, put your hands over your head.
She said to me, like, we need to do something that's so we know each other's game. And I was like, right, okay. And then she says, right, you have to shout, because we were like giving each other dares and stuff as well.
She's like, oh my God.
If you come, you need to shout, fuck's sake, fucking bastard. And I'm like, okay. So there's all that. So he came up, and we didn't realise he was super camp as well. So he's just like, in the bedroom, just like thinking he's God. And
oh God.
his pants coming off and everything, and he was just like, he didn't know what was going on, because her and I, like, one of us was on his face, another one was on his dick, and we were like high-fiving in the middle. Shouting,
yes! The Eiffel towered him. It's like the male reverse.
Totally. That's so good. We were such little men that night. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And it definitely just stands out as like one of the most hilarious nights of my life. And you know, like, I remember his name was Silvio. That's all I remember about
Silvio.
So she shouted bail, bail. She was the one that shouted it, because she was just like, I'm done now. So I just immediately just hopped off him, and I was like, goodbye. Just yeah, like,
bye. No.
And I'm like, he was just like, what? And I'm like, get out, you have to go now. He would just shut the door, and we were just, I jumped on the bed and we were just lying back. Like, that was hilarious. And that was it. We just went to sleep. So it was cool.
That sounds so good.
He was probably like just about to bust a nut, and then he was like, what?
Did he come?
No, he didn't.
The poor guy. Silvio, we feel for you. Them blue balls. Oh.
Oh my god, that's actually true. He would have had the biggest blue balls.
Yeah.
They're really painful. Yeah. Especially if he was that turned on.
I hope they're still blue to this day. But yeah.
That's the dominatrix in you saying that. You're like, yeah, be blue, be in agony.
Yeah. Did you like do sexual things with this friend, or was this like the first time that you ever did anything like that together?
That was the first and only time that we did that. But we had other little dares that we threw in there as well. It was June, and I dared her to put his balls in her mouth and hum a Christmas carol.
Oh my god, a Christmas carol.
He must have just been like, what the hell is going on?
She started humming, and like, it took a minute for him to kind of click to what she was humming, and he's just looking at her. What is she doing? There's probably some like very traumatized Sicilian guy just walking about.
Yeah.
Afraid of red shoes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he probably has something to do with red shoes now.
You need to reach out to him, do some like, you know, therapeutic trauma resistant hypno on him.
I think you'll definitely need it. Yeah. I mean, he didn't seem like there was any lack of consent though. He was absolutely diving straight in there. I think there was more of like just a confusion for him. Like,
yeah. What would have been the language barrier? Like,
why the jingle bells? Is this a thing in Scotland?
Yeah.
Like, probably Scottish, like, ladies are crazy.
Terrified of Scottish women.
Yeah. So that was hilarious. That was my best one.
Fuck number three.
The fantasy fuck.
To think long and hard about this, and what would I want, because most of the stuff that I've ever wanted to tick off I've already ticked off.
Oh,
so, like, you know, all the kink stuff that I've had my own dungeon for what, 10 years now.
Yeah.
And you know, I've done most of the things that I've ever wanted to do, but so I think it'd probably be something just very like normal. I don't know. I've done most things, but I just like that kind of, so I've got quite a busy mind. I'm constantly like, I'm running two businesses. I'm constantly thinking up like, what's the next thing that I need to do? What sessions have I got to plan? I need to come up with metaphors for doing the hypnotherapy and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, just having that ability to just switch off and just get lost in fuck, you know, just kind of like,
right,
and quieting the mind down a little bit. Because I'm always switched on, like, and it takes a lot for me to kind of like quieten down that 100 mile an hour brain. So
that
even though it sounds pretty conservative, is the kind of, that's the fantasy for me. It's for me to just let fucking go. So
yeah, would you ever like completely switch? Because obviously you're a dominatrix. Would because I feel like if you switch, that's when you could like properly turn off.
See, I wouldn't, Well, that's on one. That's my next one of the ones that.
It's coming.
So the switching thing, I've tried and I know it's not for me.
Oh really?
What I'd like to do is just have everything all kind of mapped out, have complete and utter free reign, so that I can just get lost in whatever I'm doing, and I don't have to, you know, I can be spontaneous and I can do loads of different things, and I know that the person, you know, we've spoke about it loads, I know that they're definitely into all of the things that I've got planned for them, and I don't have to worry or check in. Like, that would be the fantasy, like, just having complete free reign.
That does sound like the ideal fuck, though, right? Like, having someone that's that good at communication, like, that spiritual connection where you can just fully get, like, lost in each other. That is the dream. Like, if you find that is the dream.
Absolutely.
Reed, your face is like... is it the dream?
I don't need that spiritual connection to just have a great fuck.
I guess the spiritual thing is somebody that I would say would be more of like a partner level. But I think I could have that kind of absolute trust with someone without having to be in a relationship or have that kind of any more than a kind of meaningful connection, you know. It needs to just be that kind of, I trust you that you're not going to hurt me in any way that I don't want to be hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I trust that you've got my best interests at heart, and we've spoke, you know, I really enjoy being able to speak so openly with someone about sex. Like, that's a massive thing for me. And that, again, ticks off that psychological side. It ticks off that box, which is lovely. So,
and this is you mainly doing stuff to a partner, not the other way around.
Yeah, uh-huh. And I love having total free reign to do that and just to, I really, really enjoy that.
That's great lay. Like a real great giving lay.
Do you think you're a giver then, definitely, than a receiver?
100% giver. Like, I love giving. And people get that mixed up when it comes to domination, because really... If you want to strictly define dominant or submissive, I'm only doing the things that people ask me to do. So who then is the submissive really in that? Because I'm just following the directions from someone else. But I just do it in my own dominant way, in my own spin, in my own creativity. So it's just, I'm definitely a giver. And I think that I feel like a lot of subs that I've had in the past have been super self-indulgent. Like, there's very few that are true slaves where it's all about the mistress. Most of them are subs rather than slaves, and subs are people that are like, well, you can do this, but I only want to done with that thing, and I only want to do this time. And if you, and please don't say this word or that word, or then, you know, all of that stuff.
So for me,
I guess, if you know, to put it in just a few words, my fantasy fuck would be having a true slave.
Yes.
Someone's just like, fucking, I'm just your meat puppet. Do what you want.
What could you tell us one thing that you would do to them?
Oh, right, okay. So there's loads of things, like, I think definitely loads of CBT. I love the whole chastity thing as well. Cuckolding.
Yes.
I love pegging. I think pegging's like the best thing. But so many guys like just don't, they're not into it. They're just like, don't pin up my bum, make me gay. And I'm like, it won't.
It won't.
Am I a guy? Of course I'm not. Like, so fucking just shut up and take my big rubber dick. Yeah, I'm into like big sort of like big silly himbos, you know, the guys that are just like,
yeah, we love a himbo.
They're just like running about with their muscles and big dick, and they're just like, oh, okay, I'll just do whatever. And I'm like, yes you will.
I thought this was a word that Reed made up the other day. I didn't realize it was something that everyone used.
It's flying around, man. It's the new word. It's basically the male version of a bimbo. But himbo is like generally a nice, sweet guy who looks after his granny, but is like big and quite dumb. It's quite like a Yeah, like bimbo. It's like it's a stereotypical word. You know, it's not necessarily a compliment, but it's a stereotype for sure. It's like bimbo. You think of a bimbo being like a stupid girl who's like only into sex. It's kind of the same. Himbo.
Fuck number four. The what the fuck?
Well, I was, how old was I now? About 19, I think. 18 or 19. And there was this guy that I'd fancied for so long, like ages and ages. And I'd met him in a bar and I was out with my friend and this guy came over and I was just like, holy shit, it's him. And we started talking and stuff and it turned out that he quite liked me as well. And he said, right, well, we were in a place called Brackney, which is like the east end of Glasgow. And he said, well, why don't we go into town? I want to go and like go clubbing or whatever. And I was like, okay, cool. So we ended up in this this gay nightclub called Bennett's. And And I, you know, my heart sank a wee bit because I thought, oh no, is he like gay? Am I just like, have I misread this completely? So, but he just liked the place. He really just liked the club because it was cheap drinks and like, it was just cool. So
that's also amazing that he was open to go there.
Yeah, man. My dad loved gay bars back in the day. He was like, I'd pick up all the straight women going with their gay friends. It was the best place to go. He was like, great music. I could wear leather. It was fucking great. Oh, Dad.
It definitely moved them up in my estimations because I was like, this guy's cool. Like, once I learned that he was straight and he was cool, we're going to gay bars. I'm like, this is cool. What an open-minded guy. Uh-huh. So, end up going back to his house. Everything's going well. We are like shagging and all that kind of stuff. And then he tells me that he's been taking ecstasy tablets. I was like, okay.
What the fuck? All night?
Oh, I didn't even notice that he'd held it. Hid it so well. So then so we were shagging, he's telling me he loves me and all this, and I'm like, but you've only met me tonight, like how can you love me? And then he obviously told me about the eckies and stuff, and I was just like, right, okay, this is weird now, because I was very anti-drugs, like, so, and I'm like, why did you do that, all that stuff. And then he tells me that he thinks he's having a heart attack.
Oh, for goodness sake, no.
Right? So scroll down 10 minutes and we're having to call an ambulance for him.
Oh my god.
I expected maybe just like a stride of pride the next day and that would be the worst of it. But instead of that, I'm then in the back of an ambulance with him heading into the Royal Infirmary. He gets hooked up to a heart monitor and he was crying in the bed.
Oh no.
And then he's like, could you go and phone my dad and tell him that I'm in hospital? They gave me like 50p for the phone. So I was like, oh, I just met this guy. And I had to go. I was so hungover, still sore from all the pumping. And I had to go and like pick up this payphone and phone, because it was like way back. I'm 37 nearly. So I had to phone and his dad didn't answer. And I had to leave a message on the answer phone and just say, hi, you don't know me. I'm just a friend of your son's and he's in the Royal Infirmary now and he's there's something wrong with his heart. And then I just hung up and I was like, I'm gonna leave now. So shit. I went home and I never saw him again, but that was the weirdest experience of my life. Like,
wow.
Do you know if he had a heart attack? I mean, it sounds like a panic attack really.
I think it probably was a panic attack, but you know, I never like hung about to find out. I thought his dad will come up and sort him out or whatever, but this is just too weird for me. So
I
don't think doing drugs and having sex is fine, but when you're with somebody and you're not honest about what you're doing, it's like if you were to turn up to a date completely drunk and they weren't. I feel like you have to give them that knowledge that you are going to be, that you have been drinking or that you are a little bit drunk or you have taken something, because there is that sort of weird element of dishonesty there that I'm not really keen on. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if he had told you earlier and you're like, oh yeah, great, can you give me some? And then you could have had a great night. But the fact that he kept it from you, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah,
I don't know either.
It was just like, it's as if it was just the norm for him. So and then for me, he didn't know my stance on drugs at that point. And that point, I was like anti-drugs. That changed a bit in my 20s, and now like I'm completely straight edge. But it was just an odd thing, you know. I'd never really encountered anyone like, because at that point, the only thing that I thought about drugs was, like, if you take ecstasy, your brain will come out your nose because of that Leah Bell photo. So I don't think his brain's going to come out his nose, that's what's going to happen to him. But really, like, it was just odd. Like, why not tell me? And then that really further kind of entrenched those views that drugs are bad, because he's ending up in hospital and stuff. So
I wanted to ask, when we were chatting on the BBC podcast, you mentioned that you were so against sex work, and now that you're a full dominatrix, like, how did you make that transition?
So I made that transition the minute I walked into Seventh Heaven, a strip bar in Glasgow. I'd always been dead against it. Right up to the very minute that I walked into that place, I had all these weird misconceptions. This, you know, it was fueled by insecurity and fear and what I thought about myself, or what I thought to be true about myself. Mm. And I just thought, like, and you know, I had a boyfriend that knew someone who was a stripper as well, and the way he spoke about her wasn't very nice. Yeah. And now that we're looking back on that, I can see that that definitely influenced my views. I mean, I used to watch a lot of porn, like way too much. And for me, like, I became resentful about that, because it got to the point where we weren't even having sex, and there was like magazines all under the bed. There was a suitcase full of them in his cupboard. Like, it was magazines at that point, or VHS tapes. So it was just like, I felt like that became like a barrier in our relationship. So I think that was part of my resentment. And just the way that he spoke about women that did that. And, you know, it got to the stage where I used to just cause an argument with them by saying, I'm thinking about just doing porn. And he'd be like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? It's disgusting, like, all that kind of stuff. And so I carried that with me for a long time. And I was working in a car garage, and I was in town with the guys from work one night just having a few drinks. And some of them said to me, like, do you want to go to the chicken dippers? And I thought we were going for food. So I was like, I'm like, yeah, I want food. And because I'm like one of these people that when they drink, they just want to eat everything. So I was like, yeah, we'll go for chicken dippers. And they were like, no, it's not food. It's like, we're going to the strippers. So, and I was like, and my mood just, I remember it clearly, my mood just dropped. I was like, no, I'm not going there. Like, it's disgusting. Like, I can't believe you go there, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, fucking loosen up, man. Like, it's quite a good night. It's not what you think it is. If you don't like it, we'll leave. And I was like, right, okay. So, you know, the drink did kind of lower my inhibitions a wee bit, I suppose. But I walked in there and I was so uptight, you know, like my shoulders around my ears, just like arms folded, pure horrible face on. And I opened the door and I was just seeing all the sparkles and like, and all the women that were there were just normal women. I just built them up in my head so much that there were going to be these like amazing glamazons, and they would all look down their nose at me and all this stuff that I'd taught myself. And then we went downstairs and we sat down. It was all table service, and a couple of girls came over, and a few of them had said, like, do you want a dance? And if the guy said no, they just disappeared. So it wasn't like lechy or anything like that, or sleazy or seedy, the way that I'd built it up in my own head, ridiculous imagination. And then once I'd calmed down and I realised that everybody was just normal, I was listening to people's conversations and like how the girls were selling their dances, and immediately my sales brain kind of kicked in, and I was like, she should ask more open questions. Like, he would definitely have a dance if she showed a wee bit of interest and da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And all these things started going, and I'm going, I could make money at this. Then I left the strip club that night and I started looking for dance lessons. I phoned up the club actually the next day and I was like, are you looking for any dancers? And they were like, yeah, but how much experience have you got? And I was like, none. And she says, well, you're going to have to get some dance lessons then, because like, you need experience. So I phoned, she gave me a number to phone, and I got two lessons on how to do a strip like a pole routine and a lap dance. And then I went in an audition a week later, and they took me on and they said, look, we'll just not put you in the pole for the first few weeks till you're comfortable. There was a lady there that helped me, like, she said to me, look, the best thing to do is just look around you when you're dancing and see if there's any wee moves that you want to incorporate into your routine. She said, just look at the more experienced girls and you'll get more of a feel for it and you'll develop your own kind of style. And I did really well out of it. And what I noticed is, see, if you say it's your first night, you make so much money. So what I used to do is I'd come in on all different nights and I'd sit down and I'd like, it's my first night. And it was my first night in every club that I went to, because I ended up dancing in loads of places all around the world. But every single place that I went to, it was always my first night. So
that's so good. Yeah, that is such an amazing kind of story and change. And I totally see where you were coming from at the beginning, like being in a relationship like that and having someone around that, I guess, in he like watched like a lot of, like, he was a consumer of sex workers, but like had such a bad opinion of them. So obviously you would take that on board, and then you'd also see all that stuff and feel like slightly jealous or something in your relationship.
Yeah.
And it would definitely make you feel like a certain way. And it takes seeing sex workers in real life to understand like what it truly is.
Totally. And the thing is, like, I can't even blame him. You know, I took that on board. So it's my opinion, my mindset, and I'm happy to take ownership of all of that, and I always have, but it was also my responsibility to change that and to find out the truth of the matter rather than, and it took me a while to do that because I was pretty easily led. I was a chronic people pleaser when I was younger, so, you know, if someone told me to be something, I would be it because I just wanted to be liked. And that is something that's had to grow and develop through time and through experience and getting older and go and really looking at myself and being very honest with, you know, what my opinions are, my thoughts are, and where do they come from and are they true? And that's something that's been good. And I think if the world had a wee bit more, I'm not perfect at it, but if the world had a wee bit more of that, a wee bit more of like looking inwards instead of outwards, then there would be a lot less kind of hostility on things like social media and stuff like that.
Very true. But you now have a job where people literally worship you. They don't just like you, they worship you.
Fuck number five.
The fuck that changed the game.
I would say the fuck that changed me, and this is kind of like in a professional sense though, is I'd spent all my time training as a dominatrix, really focusing on the dominant side of things, developing and becoming better at verbal, better at like my skills and better at technical stuff, better at building up layers of things that I was doing. But it occurred to me that I'd never actually seen it through the eyes of a sub. And this is the thing that I was saying earlier about trying the subbing thing. So a very, very trusted friend says, look, I want to see this through the sub's eyes. And a lot of it, I'll be honest, I didn't like, but I thought it was really important for me to experience it from that side so that I could be even better as a professional, so that I could
put
everything in my dungeon and go, well, that's what that feels like, and this is what went through my mind, so maybe it might be similar for them, and how can I make that better? So it was quite a kind of, it was more of a sort of educational, technical kind of fuck, but it was, and there was like another, you know, there was a side of it that was just us being us, but it definitely made me a much better dom. It also solidified my belief that I'm dominant and I'm not, you know, that I like to be the giver, not the receiver.
Did we finish? I feel like I was going to say something, but I've forgotten what it was now. Did you have any questions, Reid?
I've got a lot of new stuff that I haven't tried, so, but I would definitely say that's made me who I am.
Yeah. I think that's so important. I think it's so important that anyone that's going to be super dominant in the bedroom, like, they need to know what it all feels like, because otherwise you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. And it's not really safe if you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did we finish? I feel like I was going to say something, but I've forgotten what it was now. My brain. Did you have any questions, Reed?
I was going to ask about, like, your opinion on sex workers' rights, or, like, England versus Scotland and sex work.
Well, Scotland have just announced they're doing a consultation on whether or not to bring in the Nordic model. Mm-hmm. So basically what they're doing is they're asking the public to comment and to decide. Now that becomes a popularity contest. So
that's dangerous.
Yeah, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a super hard fight. I, as the trade union secretary, I'm still working with the dancers because that's still ongoing. So I don't have capacity to fight that on top, because obviously I need to look after my own energy and my own time. So I've passed that on to, like, the escorts that I know, and said to them, you know, there's full support if you need it from GMB, who were incredible last year when we fought the dancers campaign. But right now, like, it is horribly cruel timing, considering people are on the bones of their backside right now, panicking over COVID. I mean, me personally, like, the number of clients that I've got have dwindled right the way down. So and then I'm getting cancellations because somebody's got a cough, or their kids get a cough, or whatever, and it just becomes like, and then they want to just remove clients from people who are already struggling in the name of saving people. Like, come on,
it's so messed up.
Wow,
there's an election coming up, so it's pretty obvious timing.
Oh god, but that's really scary during this time when everyone's struggling so much. Is there anything our listeners can do to help the situation?
Anyone in Scotland, just ask people about, you know, what do they want, and really educate themselves on the Nordic model versus decriminalisation. So Nordic is where you would criminalise all clients. What that does is it reduces the pool of clients that are available, because a lot of the people who are a bit scared of that kind of thing drop.
Yeah.
What it also does is, for the people that are left, nobody wants to give their details in case it's a raid. So then you can't really decipher between a good guy and a bad guy. Because everybody's not given details.
What about people with disabilities that need sex workers?
This is what I said to this is what I said on the radio, or no, in fact, it was the TV, it was BBC The Nine, that if you criminalise all clients, then if it's going to be all clients, then you're going to criminalise people that are vulnerable, people who don't have the ability or the, you know, the means or whatever to just go on, you know, go online dating, or go to a club, meet somebody in a bar, or any of these kind of things. Because that, you know, it might happen in their world that that's the norm and that's what they get to do. But we have to remember that just that our world isn't everyone's world. Like, so just like, if you've got a problem to solve and there's 10 people that need to solve it, each one of those 10 people will have a slightly different solution based on the experiences and the thoughts and the opinions that they've got in their little bubble of the world. And it's the same when it comes to people's opinions on sex work. And that's why it's really important that you ask the people that are actually doing it, rather than just basing it on your little made up bubble of thinking that you've pulled from different things, and you're then putting out there as fact and truth, when the fact of the matter is it makes sex work more dangerous. And you know no one wants it, so it's just annoying.
So basically, now is the time to really be so, like, proactive by being, like, pro sex worker, like, talk about sex work, normalize it so that it becomes, like, a normal career in more people's eyes. So I guess we just need to open the conversation more, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I mean, I'm not wanting everybody to be like, you know, the absolute blue sky would be all sex workers are seen as, like, legit jobs and workers and all this kind of stuff. And it's, you know, when it comes to the public, it needs to be baby steps. It needs to be, first of all, let's just keep them safe, and then we can take the next step from there, which is, okay, well, let's give them some nice premises to work from, and let's give them mm-hmm. rights, and let's, but when it comes to the public, although we're already living in our bubble of, I know what this is all about and what we need, they're not there yet, and
they're really not.
Nudging people just along that route, and being patient that not, you know, people need time to pick these ideas up and to understand them and to allow that to percolate.
For fuck's sake. This week's sex question is, I recently told my boyfriend of 1 year and 7 months that I had never finished from penetration. As in orgasm. Mm-hmm. He's obviously very hurt, and he thinks that the whole sexual side of our relationship was a waste. However, I don't see it that way. It's going to take a long time to rebuild this part of our relationship, and I was hoping that you could offer some advice.
I mean, bravo to this girl, like, actually coming out with her truth and speaking to her, because this is a tough subject, and that's a very hard thing to do, especially after a year and 7 months, was it? To be able to speak to her partner, that must have been terrifying to do, because you just have no idea how your partner's going to react. So fucking kudos on you, girl, for actually, you know, grabbing life by the balls and saying your truth. That's props to you.
It's hard, and it's really hard to tell someone that, oh, like, you're not making me come.
That's hard.
So I kind of see that in the sense that if I told my mum that I really, really loved her terrible lasagna every time, you know what she'd do? She'd give me more of that terrible lasagna. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really, really important. And it's hard, though, because it's scary, because nobody wants to hurt somebody that they love, that thinks that they're giving you everything that you need and it's done with the best intention and stuff. It's hard to say, actually, that doesn't work for me. So I agree, Reid. I think that she's such a brave soul for doing that. But our sex life will be better. But then I think the next step needs to be, well, what does work for her? Mm-hmm. And look into, you know, really explore that side and figure it out. And for him, he can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's one tiny little part of the relationship. Like, that's an opportunity to grow, and it's nothing personal on him. It doesn't mean that, like, his dick's shit or anything like that. They just need to find a new way of, like, making this happen.
And also, like, exactly, not really, you know, nothing on him, but I don't know why he hasn't checked, or this hasn't just been an open conversation from the beginning. Why they haven't had I know why, because they haven't been given the tools or the right education for it. I mean, why hasn't he gone, like, oh, did you come this time? Was that good for you? Was there something I can do better? I noticed you were a little bit quiet, or what does an orgasm feel like for you? And then it's like, oh, I actually don't know. There's a lot of things that could have been said, but it does sound like a shit situation that hopefully now can change for the better. But it sounds like you would have probably have hurt his pride, and it's whether or not he has the confidence within him to be able to, like, take that brat back, bring that back into the relationship, and end up having great sex with you.
Yeah, I think it's worth, maybe when you're sort of trying to rebuild your sex life, focus on the positive things that he did do, mm-hmm. and then build from there. Be like, I really liked it when you did this, but you could have, like, we could just do that a little bit longer, or, like, we could do this then afterwards. And I think for his ego's sake, let's butter him up a little bit when we're rebuilding things. But it is going to be a bit of a long game of communication and learning how to communicate with each other properly, because basically you've gone a year and 7 months without communicating with him, that's going to be hard for him to hear.
Positive affirmation is always the best way forward. It's just saying, I really like that. Do more of that. Keep doing that. But it also depends on, like, how you are in bed as well. Like, if you're a very loud person in bed, then maybe all this time he genuinely thought you were having an orgasm. Maybe make it maybe make it your prerogative that if you do actually come, or if you're close, I verbalize it. I say like, oh my God, I'm so close, or I can feel like I'm getting there. Like, oh, I was almost there, but it's just reset. Or like, I am coming. This is amazing. I am telling you that I'm coming, because sometimes my orgasms just sound exactly like normal, regular pleasure.
Yeah, very true. I can orgasm silently.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
quite
yeah,
a lot
silently.
Of the time.
I'm just like, last time I was literally like whispering, like, I'm coming, I am coming. This is what's happening. And he was just looking at me like, what?
Well, you could just shout, fuck sake, fucking bastards.
Yeah, fuck sake, fucking bastards, get out.
High five. Done.
Well, unfortunately, it is time for us to fuck off. But Megara, thank you so much
thank
being here. Oh, we never heard the story behind your name.
Oh, so Greek mythology. I was talking just about my name. I wanted alliteration, so M.M. Mistress Megara. And then I thought, maybe I want a surname, I don't know. So I was looking at minerals from geology, because I was studying geology at the time, and I was looking at malachite and all these different things. And then I ended up in Greek mythology for some reason. And there's three sisters. Wow. There's Megara, there's Tisiphone, and there's Alecto. And those three sisters were sent down by the gods to punish men to the point where they wanted to kill themselves because they'd done bad things. They'd not to kill them, but just to cause them extreme pain. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
So they were called the Furies or the Erinyes. They started off as baddies, and then because they did such good work with punishing all the men, they then became hailed as like semi-god heroes. And I chose Megara because it had that alliteration in it. So Megara.
Yeah.
So good. Imagine that, like three goddesses sent down to punish men.
Literal dominatrixes.
Yeah, literal. And then they were awarded for it. How amazing.
No.
I mean, that's not a very feminist way to look at life, really. Where's my three men coming down to punish the bad women? I want some three gods. That sounds good. Send all three of them. To my bedroom, please.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Your stories were amazing. Can you tell our curious fuckers where to find you?
Oh, in several places. There's, for the domination side of things, you can get me at mistressglasgow.co.uk or Twitter at Megara Fury. My Instagram is I Love Megara, which is easy and it's nice to type. And then for the coaching side of things, you can get me on dominantmindsetcoaching.com and you can book a free consultation. They'll make a plan up for you and then we'll get cracking. So yeah, it'll be good to see people.
Amazing.
Beautiful. I hope people do contact you. I bet you they will just to see your beautiful face and get some whipping in there.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, have an amazing day and I will speak to you soon.
Thank you so much, my lovely. Guys, thanks for listening to us today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have, please share it around. Spread it like the STI we know you guys got.
And give us a rating and a review. And I'm going to say this again, please, if you're listening to on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating, because we had some troll leaving us one stars and like bad comments. And we all know that's not the general gist of what you'll think.
Maybe it is, man. Maybe there's three goddesses are coming down to go find him.
Yeah, so anyway, if you love this podcast, please just take a second to leave a rating and a review. We would love you forever. And if you have a story or a sex question, please email it in at fksgivenpodcast@gmail.com.
Especially if you guys are super fans of the podcast, we will be having a Patreon out where you get loads of extra juicy content from Florence and I. We cannot wait until it launches, so keep your ears peeled. If it hasn't launched already, I don't know whether or not we'll have like a little advert slipped in at the front of this, to be honest. But other than that, you'll hear us next week, next Thursday.
Yeah. Goodbye, curious fuckers.
Goodbye.
Root Insurance is all about you and how you drive. In fact, that's the number one factor we use to give you a better price, which puts you in control. Just download the Root app, hit the road, and we'll take care of the rest. The app measures your driving behavior and gives you a custom rate based primarily on your driving. The better you drive, the better your rate. It's car insurance made for you. Visit joinroot.com today to get started. Disclaimers may apply. See joinroot.com for details.